harmed, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The knower of the absolute truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that he is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and that his position should not be in the material creation. He knows his real identity as part and parcel of the Supreme, who is eternal bliss and knowledge. And he realizes that somehow or other, he is entrapped in the material conception of life. In his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. He therefore engages himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses, which are all circumstantial and temporary. He knows that his material condition of life is under the supreme control of the Lord, and consequently he is not disturbed by all kinds of material reactions, which he considers to be the mercy of the Lord. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, one who knows the absolute truth in three different features, namely Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Tattvavit, for he knows also his own factual position in relationship with the Supreme. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Kacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prasthachari Asakari Mukam Kuruti Vacharam Bhangam Langayate Giri Nyakri Patram Mahamande Sri Guru Vinyatana. So this verse and purport have very significant information about what makes transcendental knowledge special. Because we all have knowledge, right? There's so many people in this room who go to school and who study various things. They study to get knowledge. And some of that knowledge is very influential in their future. It may be the difference between getting a good job or not getting a good job, getting a good paycheck. It may be the difference between achieving success in some field or not achieving success in some field. But that knowledge, whatever that knowledge is, if it's coming from a mundane source, it's destined to be insufficient to provide the happiness which everyone is looking for. Everybody is looking for a happiness which is eternal, because the nature of the soul is that the soul is eternal. And each of us is a living entity inhabiting a body, and that body is temporary, and the soul within, the soul is the person who we actually are, that soul is eternal. So when we make the mistake of identifying with the material body and the knowledge that goes with the material body, we make it causes a series of mistakes. It's kind of like playing dominoes, you know. When you play dominoes, you line them all up and you knock one down and all of them fall over. So when we make an initial error in our cultivation of knowledge, then that initial error causes so many other errors. So the initial error that we generally make is that we think we're this body. And from that initial error, we begin acting on the wrong platform. We start accumulating things and thinking that those things will make us happy. We start doing things and thinking that the things we do will make us happy. We start avoiding things that we see causing us suffering, and we think that by avoiding some suffering, we'll ultimately have a happy life, a peaceful life, a comfortable life. But somehow or other, we never manage to get that together. You ever notice that? It's like, no matter how much we avoid something that causes us some suffering, then around the corner from another side where we weren't quite looking, then something comes and boom, there we are, miserable again. Something else is hurting, something else is falling apart, something else is breaking, something else is costing us money, some other hoop that we have to jump through appears before us, and we're constantly chasing after an illusory will-o'-the-wisp kind of happiness that seems to always be 2 inches in front of us. We never quite get there. So because we're thinking that we're a body, we're stuck on this treadmill. where we're like constantly walking, running, but we don't go anywhere. They say that of all things, high-ticket items that are purchased in department stores that never really get used, treadmills, exercise equipment, they're right up at the top. You know, so people buy them all the time. They make some resolution. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to get skinny and beautiful and whatever. But they walk, and it's boring walking nowhere. You know, so you kind of stand there, and you know, one foot in front of the other, hour after hour, and you think, maybe if you're a devotee, you think, okay, well, I'll listen to a tape of Prabhupada, and if somebody else, you're thinking, no, I'll hear my music. But even that, after a while, is boring, and the machine just sits, and it doesn't ever get used. Just promises, right? And it stems from this false understanding, again, that I'm this body, and that by doing something with this body, I'll become happy, but we're always short of happiness. So we're always suffering, because this body is temporary, and everything that goes with it is temporary. And the nature of what we need to make us happy is not temporary, it's eternal. So it's described here in this purport, in this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that a knower of the truth is convinced of his awkward position in material association. He knows that his natural position is in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that little bit of difference in knowledge, what actually is knowledge? Knowledge goes in a progression. We have totally mundane knowledge, which we might have just talked about a little bit, probably enough. We all know what it is, right? We read it in books, and we learn it in how-to classes, and we get degrees on it. And so many things, we collect this knowledge, but it doesn't really relieve our suffering. But there's another kind of knowledge that comes in also in a progression. It starts with the beginning stages is the realization that we're not that body. And even though that's the very beginning of transcendental knowledge, it's a very liberating knowledge. It's a very liberating thing to really know. Now, of course, there's a difference between knowing it and knowing it, right? You can memorize it. You can ask any of the children here, and they'll tell you, I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul. And that's very nice, but if they stub their toe or they hurt themselves in the park, they forget that very quickly, right? We forget that very quickly. And even for us, when we go through our lives, we may know intellectually that we're not this body, but practically speaking, it's very difficult for us to call that knowledge to play. It's very difficult for us to keep that knowledge working for us. So therefore, we have to deepen that knowledge and turn it into a realization. Once we have some kind of deep understanding, a deep realization, that within this body, this material body, within it there's another, a transcendental spiritual entity, that is actually ourselves, then we can begin to act on the platform of a higher knowledge. And that higher knowledge is that really, because I'm not this material body, the things that will make me happy are also not material. They're actually spiritual. And that's a very empowering piece of information, because it means that I don't have to depend on the absence of suffering or the presence of bodily pleasure. It's hard around here, right? Because even though no matter what we do, it's hot and it's very uncomfortable. So we get an air conditioner and, you know, we try, but then you have to walk outside. So it's cold inside, you walk outside, and then you try to take a, and it hits you. No, it's very uncomfortable, it's hot. And I notice sometimes when I go out in my garden that there are very many kind of vicious living entities around here. You know, you've got these red ants that if they get on your feet, they cause great suffering, and there's these little no-see-ems that you can't see them, but you can feel them. And then there's mosquitoes, and there's all kinds of different other living entities which are very quickly able to cause you. So you become transcendental to that, because you start to remove yourself from the pleasures and pains of the body. Not that they aren't there, not that you don't perceive them, but they don't affect you so much, because you're getting your pleasure from inside, from a different place, from a relationship with another living entity that isn't vicious, that's friendly. And so then, once we start realizing that our happiness comes from within, then we can move up further in knowledge. We can acquire another level of knowledge. And then we have to start thinking about, okay, if I'm a soul, if I'm a spiritual being, what do I do? Right? What do I do? What does a spiritual being do anyway? You know, I can't just sit and be spiritual. That's boring. So I need to do something as a spiritual living entity. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the first verse of the 9th chapter that this knowledge is the king of education and it's joyfully performed. So there's an interesting concept, that knowledge is joyfully performed. That I have this knowledge and it causes me to act in a way, I perform this knowledge. I actually act out this knowledge. And in so doing, it gives me great pleasure. So what do I do with this knowledge? What does this knowledge teach me to do? How do I perform it? Well, it's explained by Krishna that the living entity in transcendental knowledge actually engages in the service of God. Now, we see in many religious traditions that when somebody is engaged in spiritual activity or religious activity, they look for their happiness from God. Right? They go to God and they expect that relationship with God to give them happiness. They go to God for that happiness. Sometimes they even go to God for the material things that they expect to cause them happiness. But at least they go to God for it. Right? They don't depend completely on their own material skills or money, but they go to God and they have a shopping list. Right? We train our children sometimes at Christmas. They go to the store and there's some guy who's a little bit heavy set and he wears a white beard and he has a Santa Claus outfit and he sits in some big throne and there's some elaborate arrangements all around him, and we dutifully take our children there. I know when I was young, even though I was born raised in a Jewish family, still there was too much competition from the Christmas spirit, you know, in the shopping mall. And so my parents would take me to get my picture taken with Santa Claus, you know, and you'd sit down and he'd say to you, "Have you been a good little girl this year?" And you, of course, say, "Oh, yeah, not too bad." "And what do you want for Christmas?" And then you have your list, you know. You went around carefully and you made your registry, just like people who are getting married or people who are having children, they make a registry at the Target or something, and you can put their name in the computer, and a long list comes out of all the things that you can go around the store and you can get for them. So we go to God like that, and we say, "Could you please give me this and this and this and this and this? And then I'll be happy, and my happiness will come from you." And when we get more advanced in knowledge, we understand that even those material things that God might give us, those aren't really the source of our pleasure, that our relationship itself with God is the source of our pleasure. But even higher than that, in Krishna consciousness, we understand that the highest pleasure comes from God's pleasure, not our pleasure. We're not even looking for our pleasure. Our pleasure is a secondary thing. It's not even on the mind of an advanced devotee. An advanced devotee wants to see God happy. He wants to see Krishna smile. He wants to see the spiritual master or the pure devotee smile. And when Krishna is happy and the pure devotee is happy, then automatically the living entity becomes satisfied. Now sometimes, in order to make Krishna happy or in order to see Krishna happy, one has to make sacrifices. Just like Prabhupada says that the closest kind of loving relationship that the living entity has towards God is the relationship of a mother and a child. And any of you here who are a parent, you will know that sometimes in order to see your child happy, you have to suffer. Right? You have to go through a little austerity. You have to get money and, you know, pay the bills and make sure they're fed and clothed. You have to do things that you wouldn't ordinarily do, take them places that they have fun at where you don't necessarily have fun at. Or sometimes if they're sick, you have to nurse them back to health, and they may be crying at odd hours of the day and night, and you have to wake up and take care of them. You have to feed them, especially when they're infants. You have to feed them several times during the night. Wakes you up. You don't get a good night's sleep. You can't go places that you might have wanted to go because you have these children and you have to take care of them. Plane fares become extremely expensive because you have a kid on each side of you. And so many different things become more complicated in your life, but they don't, it's not a burden really, it's a burden of love. We call it a burden of love, right? It's something that we do willingly, we voluntarily take on suffering, some level of suffering, some sacrifice, in order to make somebody else happy. So the devotee, he does that with God. He voluntarily takes on some austerity in his own life in order to make God happy. Interesting conception. Instead of going to God as the Father, what do we do with the Father, right? We say, Dad, can I have the keys to the car? Or I need an extra $100 this week. I'm really short. Could you give me, you know, could you give me? That's kind of the relationship we have. But in the Vedic tradition, in the tradition of Bhagavad Gita, the relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one where the living entity, we actually take on a position of sometimes being God's parent, where God is the son and we're the parent, or we're a friend, but a friend in the sense that we want to serve him, we want to make him happy. He opens his mouth, we want to give him something to eat, or we want to play a game with him, and when he opens his mouth thinking he's going to get a sweet, we're going to give him, we'll put a flower in his mouth, make him laugh. So these activities are hard for the living entity to understand unless he develops this knowledge, this unique relationship with the Supreme Lord that comes in this yoga process, or this process of devotional service, provides the soul with the greatest happiness. And the greatest happiness comes from seeing Krishna happy. So we don't have to worry about our own happiness. That's already taken care of. We can just go about our business and we can render service to Krishna, to God, and make him satisfied just by our service. We're very lucky because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you can offer me just a leaf, just a fruit, just a little bit of water. And if you offer it with devotion, I'll be happy. So it's not like God is very difficult to make happy. It's not, we don't have to buy him a Ferrari or a Porsche. We don't have to save a lot of money and get him a 4G iPod. It's not necessary to go through great trials and tribulations. In previous ages, sometimes yogis would go through great austerities for hundreds of years in order to try to control their senses, in order to pull their mind away from material attachment. They would sit in the middle of the winter in very, very cold water in order to become unaffected by cold. And they would sit in the middle of fires in the hot heat of the summer in order to become unaffected by heat. But in this day age of Kali, this time when people are not so endowed, what can anyone do for 100 years or 200 years? What can you do for 10 minutes, right? I used to do an exercise with my students when we were studying Bhagavad Gita, and I would ask them to just meditate, sit straight with their legs in the lotus position for 5 minutes. I would ask them, close your eyes and just control your mind and senses. Fix your mind on Krishna. Just Krishna, even the word Krishna or the sound Om. And just meditate on that sound. And I would watch, after 1 minute, they'd be fidgeting. After 3 minutes, some people would be looking down at their watch to see what time is it. By the time it was 5 minutes, they were like, okay, it's over, you know. But if we had kirtan, we would start chanting the name of Krishna, then I would say, okay, well, let's have a kirtan. And after 5 minutes, I would stop, and they would say, wait a minute, we haven't even started yet. 5 minutes isn't long enough to have a good kirtan. And so you can see the difference, that the pleasure of devotional activity for Krishna satisfies the living entity on a different level. And we become peaceful and satisfied in such a way, it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be complicated. Krishna has made it very, very easy for us in this age. And that's why he says, patram pushpam palam toyam, that we can offer him even one leaf, even one flower, even a little bit of water. And if we offer it with devotion, he'll be satisfied. Because Krishna, he has all the leaves. All these leaves are his leaves. And all the water is his water. And all the flowers are his flowers. So we can't really offer him a whole lot of anything because it's all his in the first place. So we can, like a child, we can take something, just like a little child saves up a little bit of money, and then when it becomes his parents' birthday or Mother's Day or some other day, he takes that little bit of money that he got from his mother and father in the first place, and he buys some little gift, maybe a piece of candy that he likes, or some other small thing he'll buy, and he'll give it as a gift. And the parent will be very pleased with that offering. Not because they need that little piece of candy or that little car or whatever, but because the child has offered it with love. And because the child has taken the austerity of taking his own money, even though it's very little, but he's taken his own hard-earned money and he's used it to buy something for the parent. So the parent feels very gratified. Right? Or the child may write just a small little card, you know, mommy, I love you, you're the best mommy in the world. And the mother receives that, and immediately she thinks, oh, this is so nice. He wrote me the nicest letter. And even tears will come to the eyes, because it's so touching when there's an exchange of love like that. So Krishna, that's what he wants from us. He wants our loving exchange. He doesn't need our stuff. And he doesn't need our austerities either. We don't need to stand on one foot for, you know, hundreds of years. We don't need to sit on fires in the summer and sit in cold water in the winter. We don't need to do those things. What we need to do is we need to withdraw ourselves from the pleasures of the material world to the point where, at least where, we can focus our energy on trying to please Krishna. The more that we can try to please Krishna, the more that we can offer him anything with devotion, the more we'll find that ourself is happy. And it's interesting here in this purport, it says that in his pure state of existence, he is meant to dovetail his activities in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He therefore engages himself in activities of Krishna consciousness and becomes naturally unattached to the activities of the material senses. So it's not that by parching the senses, one develops love for Krishna, but rather by developing love for Krishna, one is able to withdraw the senses from the material objects. So the process works together. We do a little bit of austerity on the order of the spiritual master. We don't eat any meat, fish, or eggs. But if you eat gulab jamuns and burfi, that's not such an austerity, right? We can have, we have nice things that we can eat that are vegetarian, that are offered to Krishna. And we don't gamble, and we don't take any intoxication. But we don't need any intoxication because we become intoxicated or happy with the holy name, with the chanting of the holy name and activities in devotional service. And we don't engage in any kind of illicit sexual activity outside of the purpose of procreation of children. And the reason we do that is because that particular activity causes us to deeply think of ourselves as a body, right? Not only at the time of that activity, but even leading up to that activity, right? We have to go through the whole thing. We have to look beautiful, and whatever that means, we have to make our hair a certain way. We have to be skinny, and we have to be pretty, and we have to be handsome, and we have to have muscles, and we have to comb our hair right and make sure we don't have any zits. And all this meditation that we have to do, what are we meditating on? We're meditating on the body. And we look in the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? And instead of offering our meditation and our puja to Krishna, we're worshiping the body. Right? We wake up in the morning, and the minute we wake up, we have to worship the body. ladies go into the restroom, and men also now, it's described in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, they're catching up quickly in the age of Kali, and you get to spend a lot of time combing your hair and putting your face on, as they say. There's whole shops, huge stores, where they just sell makeup and stuff that you can put on your body to make it look different than it already is. So you can change your hair color and so many things. You can break your nose and change its shape and tuck it here and all kinds of things. So we want to get out of this bodily concept of life. We want to get into a transcendental concept of life. So we withdraw ourselves from these things, and then we engage in Krishna's service, and we become peaceful and become satisfied. And as we become more and more attached to that relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we become more and or less and less attracted to the things in the material world. We need less of them, right? Anyone, I know for myself, that as I get older, I realize more and more that what the things that mattered so much before, they don't matter at all anymore. They're going away more and more, and I see them as very flickering. They're here today, they're gone tomorrow, right? The car gets old fast, and then it just falls apart, and it becomes a headache. Everything like that in the material world. So as we become more attached to Krishna, our attachment for the material world naturally diminishes. And that's very important to understand, that it's a natural progression. So we don't have to do it artificially. What we have to do is we have to just take care of the basics, and we have to chant Krishna's name. Because in this age, Lord Chaitanya, over here, has given us this very simple process of self-realization. And it's Kevala Ananda Kanda. It's performed, and it gives us the highest happiness. We can perform it without any kind of inconvenience. We can take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we can fix our mind on that chanting, and by chanting and dancing, we become very happy, and then we become peaceful, and then we can engage in other activities for the service of Krishna. So it's a very, very satisfactory way to live one's life. And one can do it in any position. One can be working. Prabhupada always used to tell us that it's not essential to change your way of life. You can do it from any position, right? You can be a student, you can be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can be a pharmacist, you can be any walk of life, and you can add the chanting of Hare Krishna to your life, and you can add devotional activities to your life, you can give some of your service to the Supreme Lord in the form of time, in the form of energy, in the form of your words by telling other people about Krishna. You can give some of your hard-earned money to Krishna. Whatever you give to Krishna, he will gratefully receive. And in return for that offering, he from within your heart will inspire you in Krishna consciousness. He from within your heart will enlighten you with knowledge. He from within your heart will remove the darkness of ignorance, which keeps you from being able to appreciate your spiritual nature and the happiness that comes from being a spiritual being. So this is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada came here to this country on the order of his spiritual master, because Lord Chaitanya wanted Krishna consciousness spread everywhere, to every town and village. And everywhere includes here. Wherever here is, it includes that place. So every place, now many, many people thought that that statement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just kind of a like an expression, you know, an idiom that, yeah, it's going to spread everywhere. But Prabhupada and our acharyas, they took this statement literally, that Lord Chaitanya wants Krishna consciousness spread everywhere. He wants everybody to take up the chanting of Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada told us that we should make the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra a household word. And that's not so hard to do. We have very many different ways we can do that by distributing prasadam. People hear about the Krishna lunch, and they hear about different groups that are chanting, the Mayapuris and other kindred spirits that are chanting all over, and they're becoming very, very popular. So people are hearing the sounds of the Hare Krishna mantra, and the tune, the sound is going on in their head and also ultimately in their heart. There are even stories about thieves who accidentally heard the chanting of Hare Krishna. Like they were outside, well, some people were robbing a bank, and they asked one man to stay outside and look out for the cops. And while he was looking out for the police, the Harinam party went by, right? And so then he heard the holy name for a little while. And just that little bit of hearing of the holy name immediately began his spiritual sojourn. We have examples of people who in laundromats were, or in a laundromat, were spitting watermelon seeds into the trash can. And looking down in the garbage, they saw one Bhagavad Gita. So they thought, what's that doing in there? And they took out the Bhagavad Gita. And then they became a devotee from reading that book. There's a very nice example of one person who was a mayor of a small town on the sea in Italy, who was always asked, can we do this Rath Yatra? For those of you who may not know what Rath Yatra is, it's a festival of the chariots. That's what it means literally. Yatra is festival, and Rath is a chariot. And we pull the chariots down the street, and we take God on a walk. And so sometimes people don't like to come to the temple. It's a little scary for them to have to get all dressed up in their fun Sunday best and come to the temple to see God. So God goes out to see them. So that's what Rath Yatra is. And during the Rath Yatra festival, everybody gets an opportunity to make spiritual advancement. Everybody gets an opportunity to hear the holy name. And so everybody makes spiritual advancement very, very easily. It becomes very easy. So Prabhupada had many strategies which he gave us for allowing everybody to take advantage of the holy name of Krishna. And by simply hearing that holy name, we immediately allow somebody to take up the process of Krishna consciousness. Once we were in New York, and one devotee handed Srila Prabhupada a sweet that he had made. That sweet was made with powdered milk and powdered sugar and butter. And he gave it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada put it in his mouth, and he said, simply wonderful. And then the devotee said to Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada, you know, we're distributing these sweets on the subway. What will happen to people who eat them? Prabhupada said, they will become simply wonderful. So there's so many different ways that we can make people's lives simply wonderful. And we can make our own lives simply wonderful by just taking up the process of Krishna consciousness. And it's so easy to perform and very, very pleasant. It gives us an opportunity to come in contact with the most munificent person, our best friend, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'll stop there, and I'll ask if there's any questions. I'll try to answer. Well, first of all, there's our perspective and his perspective, right? I remember when my dear friend Sunita left it was very difficult for me to process that she was no longer here. And some of us were talking, and we were imagining that she was in the spiritual world looking down at us saying, hey, listen, I'm okay. It's you guys that are in trouble, you know? So you should get serious about your Krishna consciousness. And I remember Sridhar Swami also, who was a very dear friend of mine, when he was getting ready to leave us, he was telling me how it was going to be in the spiritual world. He was contemplating that. And he said to me that he had heard that when you go to the spiritual world, Prabhupada meets you there, and he takes you by the hand, and he brings you to the forest, and he introduces you to Krishna, and he puts your hand in Krishna's hand, and then he leaves you alone, together. And then he said, pretty scary, huh? So there's our perspective that we're bereft of these people. The association of these great devotees, their kirtans, their association, that's sad. So we're unhappy about that because we don't get to associate with them anymore. Even we may feel that not upon death, but just upon separation. You know, someone goes far away and we may never see them again, and we become sad. Of course, now we don't appreciate stuff with separation because there's always Skype and there's Facebook and there's God knows what else. So we don't really see separation as being really separated. But there was a time when those things didn't exist. And when someone wasn't near where you were, then you didn't hear from them. You didn't see them anymore. I remember the first time someone went to India, and it was in 1973, and we were trying to make a phone call. And, you know, you had to book the phone call like 3 days before, and then at midnight the phone would ring and the operator would say, okay, I'm trying to get your call through to India. And you'd be, you know, it's 1 in the morning, and you're like, and she's trying to get your call through to India. And then finally the phone rings and they pick it up and they go, hello, hello, and you go, hello, hello, and then it's finished. Okay, sorry, that's over. So the feelings of separation were very great then. Now they're a little less, but still we miss the association of the devotees, and that's a good thing, right? We used to say that it's better to be in America wishing you were in Vrindavan than being in Vrindavan wishing you were in America. So when we're missing a great soul, we think of them fondly. Maybe when they were here, we didn't think of them so fondly. We may have liked their kirtans, we may have liked something, but I'm sure if someone asked you, you could have told them something you didn't like too, something, maybe they said something you didn't like, or they, you know, there was some, but once they're in this situation, we only remember the good. We only think of how wonderful they were and how we wish they were here, and we hear only glorification, isn't it? And someone said, many people say actually, that we should glorify people before they leave, because, you know, we wait until after they're gone, then they never get to understand how much we really loved them when they were here. We were always giving them a hard time. So that's our heart, that we feel like that, you know, just like we have that song that we sing, Jaya Nila Premadana, where Narottam is lamenting, where are these great souls? They went off and they're dancing with Lord Chaitanya, and I'm here banging my head against the rock because I don't get their association anymore. So there's that kind of feeling that we have, and at the same time we understand that they're spiritual. They're in the material, they're moving. Right? They're moving towards Krishna. They're with Krishna, or they're moving towards Krishna. They're making advancement. Krishna's taking care of them. Prabhupada's with them. And we're very glad for that. I remember when Gauri left us in Vrindavan, one devotee came out of her room and he said, gosh, I've never gotten to talk to anyone just before they went back to Godhead. He said, I asked her, could you please put in a good word for me up there and see if he, you know. And Biba Govinda wrote an offering like that to Ayendra Prabhu, saying, you know, well, you're in the spiritual world, could you put in a good word for us down here that, you know, we can all get back together again eventually. So we have these two things. It's a bittersweet experience. Prabhupada said that the departure, the appearance and the disappearance of saints is the same. For them it's the same. But for us it's a little different because we're not getting their association. So actually for us it's inspiring because we can meditate on their wonderful activities and become inspired and a little sad, but absence makes the heart grow fonder, and we can, you know, become stronger and try to understand. This is This is the nature of the material world. We hear it all the time. We read it in the scriptures. We talk about it in Bhagavatam classes. Sometimes when we hear it, everyone rolls their eyes and goes, oh gosh, here we go again. You're not this body. I heard this so many times. But here it comes, right? The nature of the material world. Everyone dies. And we think, oh my God, he died. It's horrible, he died. But it's what's going to happen. It's not only what's going to happen to him or her or them. It's going to happen to every single person in this room. Today, tomorrow, next week, 3 weeks, a year, 5 years. We don't know when. It could happen at any moment. When I was in Vrindavan a few months ago, I wasn't thinking, oh, this person, he's an old man. He may die at any moment. But he could die at any moment. And you could die at any moment. And I could die at any moment. Someone once said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said to somebody, he said, old means how close you are to death. So technically, I may be older than you. Because, he was talking to somebody who was young. He said, technically, you may be older than me, excuse me, because you may die before I. Who knows? We don't know. So we are learning lessons. Everybody that leaves us teaches us a lesson. And my experience, after having many experiences like this, is that it's very profound for about 2 weeks, maybe 2 days. And then you go about your life, and you think you're eternal. Right? That was what Yudhisthira at the Lake of Death, remember when he was talking? And what is the most amazing thing? The amazing thing is you see people are dying, everyone is dying, all your loved ones are dying, and somehow you look in the mirror and you think, well, I'm the only one that's going to live, and everyone else is dying, what a shame. But it's the fact is that these experiences are there to teach us. And the great souls, they leave with a lesson. And that lesson takes us closer to Krishna, so we should take strength from it. And we should also become conscious that I need to live in such a way that my life will inspire others the way his life inspired me. Right? Because it's not like you don't have the privilege to sit around and just take inspiration and not give any to anyone else. Because if all of us did that, who would be the inspirer? Right? So therefore, let it be a lesson in that regard also, that each of us is inspiring to somebody else so that someone else is rising in spiritual life because of our association. And that also should be a lesson that we learn from these people. We see, in so many places, the name is glorified, the experiences are glorified, the activities are glorified. And what will be on my epitaph? Who will be thinking of my life being an inspiration for them? And make your life an inspiration for others. Is that helpful? Anybody else? Hare Krishna, Bada Hare. Oh yeah, in Viareggio in Italy, every year they were coming to his place and asking if they could take the Rath Yatra along the sea in his town, and he would say no. But every year they would give him a book. And then after 7 years he was mayor, and then after that time he was leaving his office and he was packing the books from the shelf, and he said, what are these books? He had all these gold, because it was in Italy, they made these books, very gilded books, very fancy golden covered books. So he had the Bhagavad Gita, and he had six volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first three cantos, and then he had Krishna book, and he was looking at the books, and he started to read the books, and then he became a devotee. And him and his wife now, they still live in that same town, Viareggio. They are initiated by Radhanath Swami, and he translates Back to Godhead into Italian, and they have a little guest house there. Kuti and I stayed there, and that's how he became a devotee. 7 years, no, and then he read the books and he became a devotee. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.